what is a proposition and what it can become. If those two things are well articulated, then rest of the things are like, can be, you know, you're creating an opening for yourself. If I don't understand what you're building, it's
very- Have you ever struggled with turning your long-form content into usable content? So super thrilled to announce that today's episode sponsor is Rikaz Studios, which helps podcasters and creators turn their podcasts and videos into short video clips and show notes and more, all with the help of AI. So visit Rikaz.studio today to try it out. So hi everyone, welcome back to the podcast. So today we have an epic guest with us today, who's Amit Singh, who's built Shuttle, and he's now building Misfits Capital, an angel fund. So Amit, let's start with your time at IIT Delhi. And like, how did that experience kind of shape you into who you are today?
That's long, long back, you know, it's almost forgotten now. But I would say one thing that, you know, the fact that you're there and, you know, you could see the best of what the best of India has to offer, you kind of are able to calibrate yourself and say that, okay, you know, I'm good because, you know, kind of they're really good and I'm also as good. So it just gives you that confidence which you carry with yourself for the rest of your life. And that allows you to go after problems which maybe otherwise you wouldn't have gone after. So it's just the confidence that, you know, kind of, as of now, I can say that, you know, that's all that stays with me. I don't even remember what I studied. Most of the people I met, they have forgotten. So yeah, that way.
So I think, yeah, one of the key takeaways that I got out of that was confidence, how it instilled a ton of confidence in you to go after the problems that you want to solve. And so let's get right into it, like the meat of the discussion today, which is like Shuttle. So let's dive deep a bit into Shuttle. Like, what were some of the growth levers that were used, or the growth hacks or the growth tactics that were used to kind of grow Shuttle into what it is today? And yeah, so could you share a bit on that front?
Yeah, sure. See, I think it all starts with a compelling user proposition. And what we are offering was an assured seat in an AC environment at 3 rupees a kilometer from somewhere close to your home to direct to your office and back in the evening. That's a very compelling proposition. It's very unbeatable even today. You know, the cabs are much more expensive. Cars you have to drive and waste your time, and then you have to pay for parking and fuel. Everywhere else you're struggling. In a public transport, you may be paying a rupee less or 2 rupees less per kilometer, but you're really struggling. It's strenuous. It depreciates your body and all those things. So the user proposition has to be really, really, you know, compelling. Once that is in place, then your whole focus has to be, or at least our focus was completely on ensuring that that proposition is what we are able to kind of deliver to the user. And then, you know, kind of it comes down to, in our case, it used to come down to ubiquity. So do we have all the routes that are required? Do we have enough stops which are close to people's homes? Is the ETA in place so that people are not missing the bus because the bus left early, or they're not waiting for the bus because bus is late? The tracking is accurate. But very interesting unlocks were also around, as our frequency will increase, more and more people will start using our services, and the people who are already using our services will increase their usage. They'll use us more frequently. Similarly, as the span will increase, you know, in the morning, you know, if you're doing only 2 hour span versus 4 hours, the number of users will increase. As we would fork the routes and we'll come closer to users' homes, the adoption will further increase, the usage will increase. I'm sure this is different for each business. In our case, once we had that proposition locked in, it was more about delivering that. And on each dimension of that proposition, we have to keep pushing the boundaries. And as and when we push the boundary more and more, we got rewarded. There was an unlock every time. And at some point, you know, the buses started becoming visible. We had a cute logo and we started painting the buses with our colors and all. That also kind of gave a big lift. But also it's like, you know, kind of every time you come to office, if you're late or if you had a good experience or a bad experience, you end up talking to people about it. Something we talk a lot about, like Like before this also, we were talking, you know, kind of when we are starting the pod, you know, running late or you know, those kind of things. So commute is a very integral part. Commute and weather, you know, are some things we discuss a lot. This is the small talk that we do a lot. So the word would pop up. People start hearing about shuttle a lot more often in their circles, in their office environment. And that would also, that word of mouth would also carry. So all these things, you know, you have to somewhere kind of put them all together and make it into the product. And those creates unlocks. And that's what worked for us.
So I think that was a really, really good, insightful kind of way to start off the podcast. So I think some of the key things in terms of like growth levels that worked for Shuttle are word of mouth and really delivering exceptionally on their customer proposition. And yeah, so my next question is, so let's dive deep now into raising money from VCs. So it's pretty like difficult nowadays to like raise money from VCs. I mean, some people might have some contrarian views on that. But yeah, so like what was the journey and the process like of raising from VCs? And like how did that process get started? Like was it somebody in your network that kind of put the first check? Like how did that all go about? And you know, you've raised millions from VCs and such, so like how was that process like?
It was painful to say the least, because you have to repeat the same thing every time. You have to give the same pitch pretty much, and it almost becomes robotic. I wish we had generative AI then, and you know, I could just send a bot to pitch for me. See, but we lucked out, you know, we got Sequoia, Lightspeed, Amazon, Toyota, SIG, you know, we got times, we got the best of the VCs. Some rounds were really easy. They were so easy that, you know, I didn't even realize, you know, kind of when it happened. But most rounds were difficult. You would just, you know, it was an endless streak of hearing no's and no's and no's. And the hardest part is not hearing a no, because founders get thick-skinned about it. The harder part is not knowing why that no is coming. Because VCs are kind of, the nature of the job is such that you don't want to close the doors forever, because tomorrow you may want to invest in that founder, in that company if things change. So you want to leave the door a little open. So you will never be really upfront and brutal on the face of the founder. Now, while that works in a certain way for VCs, but for founders, they're always, you know, trying to double guess, you know, kind of trying to figure out what is it that is not working. And you get quasi positive, you know, answers. And, you know, like the way I see it now is that the customers always vote with their money. You know, if they're not buying, they're not buying. If they're buying, they're buying. Anything else is noise, you know, kind of. Similarly with VCs also, they only vote with their money. So if they're giving you a term sheet, that is the only time they are, you know, saying what they mean. Every time else, you have to kind of figure it out. So the harder part was that. And it, you know, it's the way it started for me. It was, I had no, you know, I came from a very different world. I didn't know anyone here. So I reached out to a senior on LinkedIn that, you know, I'm looking to raise. Would you like to meet? So he met graciously. It was Pankaj, who's the CEO of Clovia. At that time, he was in, you know, he was part of some fund which had stopped investing at that point. And so he said, you know, we are not doing it anymore, but why don't you meet Rajul? He writes angel checks. And this was for the startup I was doing before Shuttle. So, so I said, why not, you know, whoever, you know, listens to me, I'm happy to go there. And that conversation worked well, and you know, kind of. So I didn't know Pankaj at that time. While he was my senior, I didn't know him. It was a LinkedIn outreach, and obviously, I didn't know Rajul at that time. And when you know, kind of, and that startup didn't work out, so we even shut it down. And then you know, when we started Shuttle, it started working, and then there was this conversation I had with Rajul, and then he came in, he wrote the first check, and through him, you know, he connected us to a couple of folks. We got a few more checks in, we got the first round in place. And then the institutional round, you know, kind of the angels, Rajul and other angels helped us reach out to other angels. other two VCs, and that's how the kind of institutional round, at least we got those opportunities to pitch those to those VCs, and then it was on us to convert at that point. So there, I really saw the value of angels coming in early because they have built their credibility over the years, and their introductions help because VCs also kind of are getting so many, inbound interest deals every day. So somewhere they have to also filter it. So it really helps if it is coming from someone they have high regards for. So probably that worked for us. But yeah, at the end of the day, it is up to the founder and what the proposition they are bringing, and what the market environment is, macro is at that time. All those things have to come together. We lucked out early, and that kind of changed things for us in a big way.
That's really amazing to hear that, you start with no network and then you just build it up. You kept on reaching out to one person and that snowballed into more and more people that you were meeting and that eventually helped you close your round. So, my next question is more like, so if you were to start like as a founder now, like reaching out to some VC or somebody, like what would you put in your first message to kind of attract them to take that meeting with you or like now that you're like an angel as well, like on the other side of the table. So, like, what could you say on that front?
Yeah, I've over the, as I keep speaking to founders every day, I figured at least there is a way in which I would like to approach. It may or may not be the right way. I think the real struggle is that we founders are not able to clearly articulate what the proposition is. And if you cannot articulate the proposition, it's very difficult for anyone else to follow you, to get interested in you. So to me, there are two questions: what is the proposition and what it can become? If those two things are well articulated, then rest of the things are like can be, you're creating an opening for yourself. If I don't understand what you're building, it's very hard for me to kind of take the next step. And if you want to increase the odds of someone else, whoever is the recipient converting, then give them a glimpse of what it can become. And if you haven't thought that far, that also is a signal that, kind of you don't know what it'll become, you're just playing in the dark. We all are playing in the dark at some level, but at least you have some view, and that will get corrected over time, and that is exactly what will never happen. But still, it's good to have that kind of an articulation in your head. So yeah, those two things I would really value. If I'm able to, someone is able to give those two things in a very crisp format, that works.
Sure. So my next question is, so now let's shift away from all the shuttle and IIT Delhi and all. Now let's get into Misfits Capital. So you're building Misfits Capital, which is like an angel fund. You've got amazing people on board like Kunal Bal and some other amazing people. So how did you kind of attract these amazing people as your members or your investors in the fund? And like, yeah, just talk us through a bit more about Misfits Capital, like what you guys are building there, and like where you see the next 5 or 6 years for the fund.
Yeah, see, it's really on one. It's not really a fund. It's more of a platform for the founders. It is we behave like a fund. We put in our own money, and we syndicate our members' money. So we do the diligence. We do the founder, founders pitch to us and all that. So it's for founders. It's very, you can think of us as one more way to get a check early in your life. But the real problem that we are solving is on the demand side. On the supply, which is the deals, which is the founders, we are bringing the founder kind of capital. So a lot of our users are founders, members are founders, or operators, and we are founders. So we understand how what it takes to build a company and what are the 100 ways of not getting it right. So we have been there, done that kind of thing. So it's a been there, done there, that kind of a capital that we bring. So that's a founder side of the story. But the real problem we are trying to solve is on the demand side, which is that see, tech has gone mainstream, and we have become users of tech, all of us. We have become believers of tech. So we are like really bullish on tech, but a lot of us are not long on tech. only a handful of angels who have access to the good opportunities and the ability in the to kind of really evaluate those companies, or the to reference the founders and diligence the company and all those things. Now there should be some, it's almost become like, kind of let's say if it is, if you're a foodie, then you need to be a chef to eat. That is the scenario here. Like typically, if you're a foodie, you just need to be a foodie. You don't need to be a chef or a cook. But here, if you want exposure to startups, you have to be an angel. And that's what current market is. But what we're saying is you could be bullish on the space, and there should be other ways in which you can get long. So our job is to kind of get high quality people with who get, kind of get conviction from each other's thought process. Now, if 10 people which are high quality are discussing investing in the same company, then the best views, for and against come out, right? So that's where the role of the community comes into play. And to your question that how did we get to this high quality community, is that first is that the seeding was like we have spent some time in the industry. They're founders, so many founders who have become friends, they have friends who have become founders. So that starting seed kind of for this community, we were able to kind of get from our network itself. And then the proposition also creates a filter, which is it's investment in startups. You require a certain net worth, you require certain, tech understanding. So that its filter itself also kind of gets a very different kind of set of people. And then, kind of the whole network, flywheel kind of starts working its way, because good folks pull good folks. And when good conversations happen, then more good folks come in. Also, the nature of the, that this is like when I'm if I'm looking to put a few lakh rupees in a company, I would want to talk to more people. One is the community folks, but I would also like to talk to people who are not in the community, but I know, okay, if I'm investing in fintech, I have a friend who is, is a founder of fintech or has worked in a fintech. So maybe I would want, and then he or she will connect me with someone else. So the nature is such that, when I'm taking a big call, I like to talk to more people. And through that, kind of they introduce misfits. Those guys also join. When founders come in to raise capital, their friends also come in, because it's a vehicle for them also to kind of invest in their friend's company. So there are these kind of synergies, or kind of that little bit of social nature to it, both on demand and supply side. But it all starts with, having a high quality set of folks early on, and then being very kind of deliberate about who you are onboarding. Like we kind of don't onboard anyone. We go through their LinkedIn profile. A lot of times we even speak to them, and it's a paid community. It's not free, so that also creates some kind of a barrier. So all those things kind of come together to creating a community. But it is a lot of it is rooted into the use case actually, which is investing in startups, which a very different segment of people are looking to do.
Now my next few questions are going to be based around some of the tweets and just some other miscellaneous questions that I had on the top of my mind. So let's talk more about the bite less and chew more. So how do you find such problems to solve for? Like, what would you say on that front?
Okay, so see, it's not about problems. It's about any problem that you're working on, any business you're building. There is a strong tendency I've seen among founders, probably because they're ambitious, they want to do more. And when you want to do more, you kind of start saying, okay, let me launch five geographies, five products, go after all the channels. And you start doing a lot of things in parallel. And in a way, you are spreading yourself too thin and you're not going deep. So it's relevant for any and every startup that anyone in early stages. What I've seen is that what really matters is your ability to go and understand the user better, go to the depth of the nuances, which is what I mean by when I say that bite less but chew more. And the goal I think is saying a lot of no's. I know founders are ambitious, so they want to do more, but by going broad, we are not increasing the odds of us becoming big. We have to win some segment, and then the market rewards us with an opportunity to expand that segment, go into adjacent markets or new geographies. All those things open up. But goal one has to be that I am locking in a certain ICP. This is my, ideal customer profile. This is my user segment which I'm going after. And it may, at different points, you will iterate and then realize, okay, this is my ICP. What I was going after earlier was not, which is fine. So you go through that journey, but you have a customer segment in mind. You have a very sharply defined user proposition. And you know the channel through which you are able to reach your ICP or target segment in a more efficient manner, which creates feedback loop. And then you use that feedback loop to iterate fast. As you keep iterating, your product keeps evolving. It becomes closer to what the user wants. And at some point, your adoption goes up, your monetization goes up, your referral goes up, your repeats and usage, all those things start going up. And that's when you realize, okay, it is working. Then you say, okay, now I know what needs to be done. I need to expand it. Now, at that point, you can think of, okay, I need to open up another geography if it is relevant for that use case, or another channel or another offering which is adjacent to it or something like that. But that comes much later in the journey of a startup, maybe after like a few years. But what I've seen is a lot of times we have this almost like a Hanuman kind of a mindset that, okay, especially in marketing, like I don't know what will work. I don't know my Sanjeevani, so I'll just take the entire mountain and just I'll open all the channels. I'll do everything if it requires. I don't even understand what is working, who is my user, and what channel works for me. So let me put in effort in all directions, and that doesn't, cut it. So it is coming from a right reason that, we are ambitious, we want to do more. But the more has to come from better conversion, not a bigger top of the funnel, which more often we kind of like we don't want to expand the TAM by having more offerings or have multiple products. It doesn't work like that. Your TAM, the market will reward you with the right to play, but first you have to earn that right to play, and that happens when you have kind of in a narrow segment you are really doing well. So that's what I meant by, you have to bite less and chew more.
I think you've explained it wonderfully for the audience today. And yeah, so my next and last question for you is, so what are the types of investors and VCs that add the most value? So you were saying like angel investors and angel checks kind of drive a lot of the conversation in VC currently at the moment. So like, what have been some of these investors and VCs that you think, in your opinion, add the most value?
See, it's also a function of stage. When you're early, you don't know anyone in the industry. It's probably your ex-boss or someone you happen to know who did well in their life, maybe willing to back you. So you go with that. But the job is to kind of get to some angels who probably understand that space. Because someone who has built a company, has gone through those ups and downs, can kind of, that founder capital kind of works. But see, at a different stage, different kind of people may add more value. If you're preparing for an IPO, then a VC or a private equity partner who has seen a few companies going IPO would be able to kind of be the create the right kind of environment in the boardroom. So it for different stages, what I'm saying is it's not that angel, like I can be on the board of a company who. Which is going for an IPO, and I would be the best guy there. Not at all, so that way. But if someone is struggling with a 0 to 1 problem, is figuring out, what is my offering, what is my user segment, struggling with some, kind of some things are working, some things are not. Maybe that's where, kind of people like me could be more valuable. But eventually, it boils down to the person actually, kind of. And for that, maybe, kind of person has to be. Should relate to the problem statement. Sometimes, let's say if I'm the founder of a farm tech or an agri tech company, and the VC is sitting in, Silicon Valley and has no understanding of how agriculture happens in India. And because of that gap, and it's not that the person, the partner has a, wrong intent or anything, but the relatability is missing. So it becomes much harder. The communication gap has to be filled somewhere. So that may, you know, so the relatability of the problem statement for the investor is very important. That reduces a lot of you know, kind of communication, unnecessary communication that is otherwise required. Also, I think the person has to be objective. The job, see, at the end of the day, it's a founder who has to do everything. Neither an angel or a VC or a private equity guy or a kind of independent board member can change anything. It's the founder who has to kind of go into the trenches and fight it out. But the fact that a founder is always in the trenches creates problems, because then you're seeing things too closely and you're not able to take a step back and take sometimes, you know, take a big picture view. So someone who is objective and is able to push you by asking the right pointed questions and is intellectually honest, while they will not give the answers, while the questions are also somewhat known to the founder also, but the fact that that process is, you know, is happening is making the founder think, take a step back, you know, take that moment, reflect upon things, and then, you know, kind of maybe, you know, make a few changes in the configuration of their business and or the product or whatever. So that is what I would say, that, you know, kind of relatability to the business and this ability to ask very sharp, objective questions without any malice, with intellectual honesty. I think that works.
For sure, and I really enjoyed our conversation today. And so yeah, do share like how the audience can like get in touch with you, how they can reach you, pitch to you, or like anything you want to share, like now's your stage.
So I think LinkedIn is the best place for me. Look for Amit Singh, Misfit, Shuttle, whatever you want to search. That's where I'm most active. And do join the community. It's an interesting community. We are helping people get exposure to startups, people who have not really actively invested but want to invest in startups. Probably we are having a very product-based approach towards that. A lot of learning around, you know, a lot of high quality people around, so the learning is very steep. It works for people who want to invest. It works for people who want to start companies tomorrow, because when you're starting a company or founding a company, you are actually investing everything into it, your capital, your time, your future time and everything. So it's sometimes better that, you know, you see it through proxy a little bit, you know, invest in a couple of companies, get a feel of it, and then, you know, kind of step out. So you understand the whole process, the questions you were asking, you know, how does this whole thing work out? You get first-hand experience of that also. So it's also kind of a great way to kind of get inducted into the ecosystem if you have aspirations to starting something tomorrow. So both for founders also and for people who want to invest in startups, this is a great place to be, is what I would say.
Yeah, the community sounds really awesome, and I'm like excited to see how you guys scale it and how you guys like do more with the community and like, yeah, so super, super.